This call is being recorded.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for this teleclass on conscious lesbian dating and love. We're so happy to be here with you tonight.
Yes, we're very happy to be here. And
this is Ruth.
And this is Michelle.
And we've got a whole bunch of stuff we want to talk to you about tonight, and then we're really looking forward to hearing your questions. So we wanted to start just by acknowledging you, whoever's on the line with us right now, just acknowledging you both for your vulnerability in joining us tonight and also for your courage. This is kind of a unique thing to do, to join in this community of lesbians and queer women who are saying, hey, we want to learn wiser ways of dating and loving that are going to get us better results. And so we salute you both for your vulnerability and for your courage in showing up, and we're really honored to have you here with us tonight.
Yeah, we are, and we know that you might be in very different places. There may be some women who are sick of thinking about dating and just taking a break for a while. Some of you are actively out there dating. Some of you might actually be in a relationship. Some might be grieving a lost relationship. Some you're not really sure whether the person you're dating maybe is the one. Wherever you are is fine, and we hope that there'll be some learning and connection for all of you on this call today.
And some of you might not be dating. You might not have been dating for a long time. You might not even know how to start dating at this point in your life, or how to find a relationship, because I think often we're not really necessarily interested in dating, but dating is this kind of bottleneck that we have to pass through from being single to getting to a happy, healthy relationship. So we're going to be talking more about those things tonight. And in any case, whoever you are and whatever your specific circumstance, we welcome you. We will be focusing this call mostly toward women who are either single or perhaps dating but not in a committed relationship tonight. But if you are in a relationship and you're listening in, we hope you will learn and benefit as well.
Yeah, and, you know, we really enjoy spending time with women talking about issues of conscious relationship and how to do it, and really providing a space that that lesbians and queer women come together and talk about these issues.
So let us tell you a little bit about who we are. We are a lesbian queer couple. We have been together for 9 years. We actually got married a year ago. And we have a really amazing relationship that we both feel very blessed to have. It's really sweet. There's a lot of joy and laughter and affection and harmony and ease and connection and trust. And we work together, we live together, we play together, and we also have separate lives too. So there's room for all of it. And I use the word ease because our relationship actually really feels easy the vast majority of the time. And one of the things that we hear a lot in the work that we're doing is people saying, oh, relationships are always such hard work. And we actually run into a lot of what we jokingly call fear and loathing about relationships, because so many women have had really bad experiences where, you know, it was just heartbreaking or was endless hours of draining processing that never seemed to get anywhere, you know, where things just weren't working. And so part of our message is that when you really do approach this consciously and you find the right partner, and also you learn how to be the right partner, then having a happy, healthy relationship is actually not that hard. It doesn't have to be hard.
It doesn't have to be hard. Yeah, we talk we talk about relationships that just work and not relationships that are hard work. But, you know, in the past, neither of us had this kind of relationship. This is a new kind of thing for both of us. And so these aren't relationships that can really happen by accident. And it's also not magic. It took us some time and effort, and we got to this place where we call, you know, being a conscious girlfriend. And it's the path that we're sharing with you on this call.
And it took us a long time and a lot of work kind of putting the puzzle pieces together, because there wasn't anybody out there at that point in time saying specifically to lesbians and queer women, this is how you can have a more deeply fulfilling relationship that really works.
Exactly.
So that's why we're passionate about doing this now, so that we can make the path that we had to stumble and, you know, take a lot of detours and,
right. Yes.
You know, a lot of difficulty along the way. We want to make that process much easier for you. So let us back up a little bit and tell you a little bit more about our backgrounds and what we bring to this work and also our relationship histories.
Yeah, so I have a PhD in neuroscience, which is something that I bring a lot into this work. But I also have a 25-year Buddhist practice, which has been an incredibly important part of my life and informs the work quite a bit. And, you know, doing all this work, oh, I also went to seminary 10 years ago. I started seminary and was in seminary for a couple of years. But doing all the work in the past that I did, you know, I had a very successful life in a lot of ways, but I had some very difficult relationships. And one relationship in particular, which was a 9-year relationship, which was emotionally and eventually physically abusive. And I had to learn a lot about myself and about how I got into it and why I stayed so long. And so I've learned a lot about that, and that's something else that I sort of weave into the work that I do.
And for me, I am a writer. I've published actually 8 books, and I have a PhD in transpersonal psychology. So I've had a private practice working with individuals and couples for about 12 years. And I also do a lot of shamanic work and energy work and other forms of healing. And so that's a big part of what I bring to this work, is that spiritual perspective and the psychological perspective both. We like to say that we blend tools from science, psychology, and spirit in our approach to conscious relationships. But for me in my personal life, as for Michelle in some ways, getting to a happy, healthy relationship was kind of the final frontier. You know, I had a great life in other ways. I had published my first book. I had a great university teaching job. I had good friends and a good life in many ways. But for a period of years, my relationship life was a disaster. And I didn't understand why at the time. Now I can look back and see that it was because I didn't know how to choose a partner wisely. And so one of the things that we look at a lot is, you know, how does one choose a partner wisely? What does that involve? And I know for me in the past, I would meet a woman, and usually if there wasn't instant chemistry, I wouldn't go further with her. I wouldn't necessarily get to know her well. And if there was instant chemistry, then often we would progress to going to bed together quite soon. And usually the hook for me was usually that, you know, often after making love, the person I was with would open up and tell me about some pain from her past or show me something vulnerable about her. And that would fill me with tenderness. And so the combination for me of lust plus tenderness, I would kind of translate to being in love. And then, of course, if I was in love, I would think that just meant the relationship was going to work. And so I did this a number of times, and the relationships did not work. And so eventually I realized, okay, I've got to find a different way to do this. You know, often I would see some big red flags that would cause me concern within the first few weeks or months, but at that point I was already in love, so I would ignore them. And so if any of you listening on the line have had this kind of experience, you know it's totally shattering. It's deeply confusing. It's incredibly painful to fall in love and have all of this sense of hope and joy and possibility and connection. And then within a few months sometimes, or within a few years, or sometimes it's even slower than that, just to have it fall apart is really, really painful. So what we are offering you through all of the work we do with Conscious Girlfriend, and of course this teleclass is just a tiny little window into what we offer, but what we're trying to offer to you is comprehensive set of tools that can really help you learn how to do this whole dance differently, every step of this dance, from how you feel about yourself to how you look for a partner, what you look for in a partner, how you do the dating part of the dance, how you enter into relationship, how you are in relationship, because most of us did not get any instruction or healthy models that showed us how to do this. And so it's not surprising that most of us haven't known how to do this, but there are ways to learn it. And so we offer a number of different methods to try to support you in that process.
Yeah, and also just to say that these techniques, these methods, the skills that we teach are grounded in science and psychology, in they're tried and tested, and they work. So we do individual. So we just published a book, which actually we're going to change the name of, but we just published it. We can get it on Amazon under Finding Her.
Mm-hmm. Finding Her, The Single Lesbian's Guide to Last Love.
And we also offer coaching for both singles and couples. If you have any couples friends who you think need coaching to help create a happy love that they want, you can send them our way. We have a weekend retreat coming up in September 18th to 20th, in Northern California. And the easiest way to access what we offer, no matter where you are in the world, actually, is we have an upcoming 12-week class, and we call it the 12-Week Roadmap to Conscious Lesbian Dating and Lasting Love. And we're going to share as much as we can about that tonight, and you'll get tastes of what we cover during that course.
But, of course, the course being a 12-week class contains much, much more than we can fit in just this hour.
Right.
And it has a lot of audios. It has a lot of written homework practices for people to do on their own. It's very experiential learning. So for those of you who want to go deeper, we will be telling you more about that class later on.
So you might ask, well, what is a conscious approach to dating and relationships? And why would you want to do it? And how it's different? And how will it yield different results?
So one short way we like to say this is that the conscious approach is about learning how to take charge of your relationship destiny. You know, I think for both Michelle and I, for a long time, we felt like our relationship lives just kind of happened.
Right.
You know, in other aspects of our lives, we knew that we could make choices that would bring about different outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
But in our relationship lives, it kind of sometimes felt random, you know?
Like luck, or we were at the mercy of whoever fate. We happened to meet. Yeah.
Right, right. It was just about, well, who do I happen to meet, and things work out or they don't, but we didn't really understand why. So when your choices are conscious, you can really get to know yourself and what you want and need, and you can develop a clear relationship vision. Then you can figure out a dating plan, and this is part of what we help women do in the 12-week class, figure out a dating plan that makes sense for you so that you can actually meet women that you can spend time with. And then you can find out, okay, does this other person share a similar relationship vision? In other words, does she want the same things that you want?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the answer is no, you know, that's not likely to get you what you want. And if she does say that she wants what you want, there's also a lot of assessment involved in observing how she shows up in the world. You know, does she actually have the skills and the commitment to create the kind of relationship you want?
And, you know, of course, I think a lot of people, a lot of women talk about, well, I have to just find the one. I have to find the right partner. This is all I'm doing. All I need is to find the right person, right? But actually what's true is you'll have to be the right person too. And that being the right person is a huge part of the ability to create lasting love.
For me, you know, we can all tell our stories different ways. And often when I tell the story about that really difficult period in my relationship life, I emphasize the fact that I was choosing the wrong partners. based on the wrong criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely true. But it's also true that I wasn't showing up in a way that really made the kind of relationship I want possible, because I was a lot better at pointing the finger at my partners and recognizing what the way they weren't showing up, or, you know, what I thought she was doing wrong, than I was about using certain kinds of communication tools and listening tools and conflict healing tools that we now know and mm-hmm. teach. So, in fact, it was kind of a double whammy. And I actually think that this is true probably for many of you on this call, the same double whammy, where you are probably choosing the wrong people and you may not have all of the ways to show up in those relationships. Even if you did find the right person, you might not have all of the skills and tools you need to create the relationship
yeah.
you want.
One of the things that we say very, very often is that if the two of us met 10 years before we actually did meet, we would have been a complete train wreck.
Right, right, because we are the right people for each other. But before we had figured out some of these tools and worked through some of our patterns, we would have really enacted a lot of painful stuff between us. So the good news is that you can learn how to do all of these things, and it doesn't even need to take that long, especially
right.
since we have created vehicles for you where we really try to speed up your learning curve. Everything that you need, both in terms of how to find the right partner, how to recognize that she is the right partner, how to tell her what it is you're looking for and have some of those conversations and lay a strong foundation, and then also everything you need to be able to show up and create a really loving, connected, intimate, sweet, trusting, communicative, passionate relationship. All of those things are absolutely learnable. And so if there are any of those pieces that I just named that you have not known how to do in the past, welcome to the club. It's a big club, and you don't have to stay in that club. It is absolutely within your power. Every single woman who is on this line tonight, it is within your power to learn how to choose wisely and then create the kind of relationship you want.
Yeah, so another big piece of this work of approaching relationships and dating consciously is learning how to dismantle your triggers. I mean, we all get triggered. It happens, you know, sometimes it happens in the supermarket, sometimes it happens in a relationship. It happens all the time. When we learn how to dismantle them, how to handle them, how to process them and deal with the feelings that come up internally, learn how to communicate about them, after we've gotten sort of through them, it is a way that you can navigate conflict in very healing ways.
And because Michelle used the P word, the process. You said process them. So
that was
an unfortunate choice of words.
Yes.
No, there are many different ways that that word process gets used. But one of the things that we've seen a lot among all kinds of people, but certainly among lesbians, is that when we get triggered, when our buttons get pushed, when something hurts or something makes us angry, if you try to work it through without dismantling that trigger first, that's what will often lead to what we call the fruitless processing loops, as opposed to a fruit loop. This is a fruitless loop,
right.
where you're just kind of spending hours and hours going around and around and not getting anywhere. And so part of how the brain science piece really comes in is that one of the processes we've developed called the SCORE process actually teaches you how to recognize when you get triggered and get yourself out of that brain state so that you can actually make an empowered, constructive choice about how to have a conversation, when to have a conversation, which conversations you need to have and
right.
don't need to have.
Right, right. Yeah.
And so that's a huge piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, and whether you're single or coupled, you know, wherever you are on that spectrum, we find that pretty much everybody needs more help in dismantling your triggers when you get triggered so that you can really keep them from overrunning your relationship life.
And not access them.
Right, right.
And all of our work is really grounded in compassion for ourselves and for others. That's a really important part of the conscious approach.
And so a big part of what we teach, too, is skills and practices. It's more about practices, actually, than skills, I guess, to really love yourself and to really have more and more compassion for yourself. Because we find that many of us really struggle with that, you know, and there's all kinds of reasons. I mean, there might be specific reasons having to do with being a lesbian or a queer woman where you faced specific hardships and challenges and rejection that might make it harder for you to really love and value yourself. Or even if that wasn't your circumstance, you know, many of us grew up with critical parents, you know, we hold ourselves to high standards, and yet the pattern of not being compassionate toward yourself really gets us into trouble in relationships.
It does.
And so, again, a big part of our message is this is common. If you have that difficulty being compassionate toward yourself, it's not your fault. It's not a fatal flaw. It's changeable. And we teach specific practices, again, based on brain science and also coming from some of the spiritual traditions that we've studied that can help you develop that self-love and self-compassion, which is really fundamental, both to even having the courage to date at all and to being able to date wisely and then also to being able to create the kind of relationship you want. So, some of this, you know, all of this actually I think is relevant no matter how old you are. You know, we all get to a point where however we've done things in the past is not good enough going forward in the future. And I got to that point around age 40 where I was like, okay, I'm the common denominator here. I need to change something. We work with some women who are really emotionally and spiritually mature who get to that point when they're like 25, you know, and it's amazing. I love to see that. And we work with a lot of women who are 50, 60, 65, 70. We had one woman get in touch who was 90. So it's never too late. And I think often the older we get, the higher the stakes are. You know, so sometimes that brings about a different level of motivation to learn new tools because you know that you don't have time to waste. You don't want to go through the same pain that you've gone through before. And so to me, that desire to do it differently is really the seed of becoming what we call a conscious girlfriend.
Yeah, I think for me also it happened around the same time, maybe a little bit later actually. And it is true. I mean, we talk to women all the time who are, you know, who are over 50, who are looking for what they think of as going to be their last relationship, the one that's going to last them for the rest of their life. And so the stakes are high. But we know that it's totally possible to find that and be that right partner, no matter how old you are. And you can learn these skills. You can pick this up. It's possible.
And not be settling. You know,
yes.
It's not
yes.
about, okay, I just need to compromise more. That is not what we're talking
right.
about at all.
Right.
We find often women are making exactly the wrong kinds of compromises and really giving themselves up. In fact, I know Michelle was talking to a coaching client earlier today about something that comes up a lot. And this client said, well, you know, how much do I need to give myself up or how much is it right to give myself up in a relationship?
And I said, none. No, not at all. Yeah, it's really important that we get to express all of who we are. And if we don't, actually what happens is we end up feeling resentful. If we're not expressing all of who we are, we're actually it's not as open to full intimacy. We don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know really that is the reason, well, not the only reason, there are many reasons why I married Michelle, but the reason why I felt able to marry her was because I knew that there was room in this relationship and room within her for me to be my full self, all of the different parts of myself. Not that every part of me lines up with every part of her.
Mm-hmm.
We are very different people.
Right.
But enough parts of us line up, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of compassion and affection for each other in the ways that we don't line up,
mm-hmm.
and we have a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And one of the things that we realize and talk about is that we have very similar relationship priorities, and that is often the thing that causes a big mismatch, is that people don't have the same priority. And there are basically four priorities, although this is totally not a comprehensive list. Thank you for that word. But there's sort of four that we identified. There's sort of the big pictures. And one is one that we share is emotional intimacy and growth as a real priority. And that's something that's very important to both of us.
So when we were looking, each of us, when we found each other, and part of how we recognized that we were right for each other was because we both knew we wanted to have that kind of deep intimacy, and
right.
we were willing to do all of the learning and growing that it took to create and maintain that.
Right.
And we suspect that if you're on this call tonight, many of you may have a similar priority,
mm-hmm.
But you might not. You know, so some of the other priorities that we've seen that you know, all of which are completely valid, is, you know, one of them is an activity partner, a daily companion. You know, for some women that we talk to, one of the biggest criteria in finding the right partner is they really want to enjoy the same activities. You know, if you are into hiking, this might mean you really want somebody you can go hiking with every day. You know, if you love to travel, it might mean this is somebody, you know, who's going to want to travel. If you like to sit home and watch movies, you really want somebody who has the same taste in movies as you. So that's what we would call the activity partner or daily companion priority.
Right. And another is somebody who you want to co-create a kind of life with. Maybe you want to have kids. Maybe you want to start an organic farm. Maybe you want to create a kind of business together or kind of organization. You want to co-create something together.
Or if you're retired or nearing retirement, maybe you have a specific vision for your retirement life.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
you know, the last act of your life,
mm-hmm.
and you really want to find somebody who shares that vision.
Right. Yeah.
Whether it's being a homebody or traveling the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then another lens or another priority that is sometimes really important for people is sexual partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at various stages in my life, that was my main priority because I felt like, okay, I can have all of the other things with my friends, but my partner is the only person with whom I'm going to have sex. That's not necessarily true, of course, if you're not monogamous, but for me, that was the frame I was operating in. So really, really high on my list was somebody with whom I had a great sexual connection and who, you know, wanted to do the same kinds of things I wanted sexually with the same kinds of frequency. And so all of these things, you know, the other day we taught a workshop and there was somebody who said, well, all of them are important.
Mm-hmm.
And they all can be important, absolutely. And we're not saying that you have to choose between them. But in most areas of life, we know that we don't necessarily get every single thing we want exactly in the way we want it.
Right.
You know, like I know when I've been looking for a place to live or I've been shopping for a car, you know, there's always certain trade-offs of like, well, am I going to go for the higher miles per gallon or am I going to go for the more reliable or am I going to go for the more quiet or am
mm-hmm.
I going to, you know.
Right. Uh-huh.
So, there, you know, we're used to choosing priorities in
right.
other aspects of our lives.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I think between Michelle and I, probably the way that we line up least would be around those
activities and daily mm-hmm. preferences. Mm-hmm. You know, if she loves movies, I'm not a big movie person. Uh-huh. I love hiking. She's not a big outdoor person.
Right. Yeah. I love to tinker with technology.
Right. She's a major geek. And, you know, I just look at the stuff she does in her workroom and I'm kind of in awe, but I have no desire to do that kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, so for us, I think having that difference actually is largely enriching.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You know,
yeah.
There may be every once in a while a time when mm-hmm. I want to go do some outdoor thing mm-hmm. and I, you know, wish that you felt like doing it
mm-hmm.
or, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe there's times when you want to go to a movie
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm. yeah,
you wish that I would go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but most of the time, because our biggest, deepest priorities really line up,
mm-hmm.
It really works.
Yeah, it does really work. Yeah. And I think sometimes women get worried that if they identify what they want, that that might narrow the pool even more, that they might not find the right woman. And, you know, what if I can't find somebody who you know, wants that same priority? And the truth is, if you're not clear about what you want and you're not clear about the priority, that and you meet somebody who's also not clear, you might actually create something that neither of you wants. Or if you aren't so clear, but you're with somebody who is really clear, then you'll go off on their trip, you'll go off on their journey, and won't be doing your own journey. And you're not going to be happy.
And I think this is such a journey, because when we first got together, there was a lot that we were conscious about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, nobody offered us a course or even a teleclass
right.
like this.
Right.
And so there was a lot that we hadn't thought about.
Yeah.
And I think that at first in our relationship, we did create stuff. Some of it was on default,
mm-hmm.
you know, because
mm-hmm.
we weren't having the conversations about, well, or even the thought processes of,
mm-hmm.
well, what do I most want? What do
right.
you most want?
Yeah.
So there were things that we did together that were just, like, not what either of us wanted
mm-hmm.
because of the kind of
right.
social assumption. Well, when you're in a relationship, that's what you do,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So so it's really been actually wonderful for our relationship. We had a great relationship even before we started Conscious Girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
but I would say it's only gotten better
yes.
because
yeah.
we walk our talk
yeah.
every single day. You know, it's such a wonderful process
mm-hmm.
because we take what we learn from our relationship and bring it into our work with
mm-hmm.
the people that we work with and teach, and then we take what we learn from them and bring it back to our relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very cool.
So back to sort of so it's really important that you can so one of the things that we talk about in the 12-week class and that we talk about a lot is unblocking yourself from love, being able to open your heart. And there's lots of reasons why people block themselves from love. There's lots of reasons why they've been blocked from love. Lots of things have gotten in the way of them finding that love that they really want.
Sometimes it's hurt from a past relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's beliefs from childhood even.
Right, right.
You know, that, you know, a belief that you don't deserve to have what you want, or other people get to have what they want, but I don't.
Yeah.
It can be all kinds of things. I actually had a really interesting conversation with a friend of mine last night who was telling me that she had been single for a very long time, or not single, but, you know, dating, having a number of brief relationships, but not having a really long-term partnership, and that she had finally asked herself, okay, what's keeping me from really
mm-hmm.
diving in and having
mm-hmm.
a partnership?
Mm-hmm.
And when she really looked at the answer, it was her fear that if she really let go and let herself completely love and be loved, then at some point if her partner died, it would be completely devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was what blocked her for a long time. And she actually told me that when she first met the woman who is her partner now, they've been together for, I don't know how long, definitely over a decade, this woman had just had a couple of older relatives, one who had been married for 50 years or something, one of whom had died. And my friend said, oh my God, that must be so hard. You know, I wonder if it's worth it. And her girlfriend turned to her and said, you should be so lucky. And that was part of the key that led to her unlocking her heart. So I guess our point is there can be a whole lot of things that can lead us to close up our hearts. Mm-hmm. And if your heart is not completely open, you might be very aware of why that is, or you might not be so aware. But either way, it's really important to learn more about it and go through the process of getting unblocked. And that's one of the things that we do help you work through in the 12-week roadmap class. Because, again, if your heart is closed by any kind of fear or any kind of belief that you don't deserve to have what you want, it's going to make it a whole lot harder for it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, a number of things happen. I mean, sometimes you'll end up choosing people who aren't right for you. Sometimes you'll end up, it's sort of like you'll be driving down the street with your foot on the brake and the gas at the same time. If you're dating with your foot and the gas and the brake at the same time, you're not going to really get anywhere. So those are the kinds of things that can happen if you're blocked from love.
And so some of the key pieces that we cover are helping you learn what a healthy relationship actually looks like. What are the components of it? Because, again, I think a lot of us are going around with little bits of partly digested, you know, not fully considered images that come from Hollywood or come from our parents' relationships or, you know, come from novels with tragic love affairs in them or, you know, wherever it might come from, you know, or from our own past experience. And so we find that in order to really open, you got to know what you're opening to. And you've got to know that it's that, you know, you can open to something that you actually want, that it's mm-hmm. worth opening
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, knowing that you deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, you know, it's important to have gone back and look at the ways in which you co-created past relationship failures. It always takes two to tangle. For me, I didn't ask for the abuse that I suffered, but I stayed too long. And so that's a part of the co-creation, and part of it is forgiving yourself for what and in whatever way you did co-create what happened. And that, you know, what's really important in that also is building a foundation of self-love and self-compassion. That having loving yourself and all of who you are, with mistakes you might have made, with the imperfections you have, because we all have them, we're human, and really feeling compassion for ourselves in those moments where we have difficult emotions or in any moment really that's happening.
And I know that week in the 12-week roadmap where we did that retrospective, where we helped women go back and look at what had happened in past relationships. It's funny, Michelle uses the term failed relationship. I don't really like that term myself,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess for me it's just like relationships that didn't end up with the happy, healthy relationship that I ultimately wanted.
Right.
They were all learning tools.
Yes.
But you know, so helping women go back and look at those former relationships, however you view them, and really understand what happened. And a lot of the women in the class had a lot of fear about doing that, but ultimately it was a very healing and empowering process. Because if you just kind of stick that old pain in a box and hide it in the closet and, you know, pile a bunch of stuff on top of it so you'll never see it again. You know, we all know it's what we call it baggage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make for a clear entry into a new relationship.
Right, yeah.
And in contrast, when you have enough self-love and compassion and you have a container, you have a process that makes it safe to take that box out of the closet and unpack it and put everything where it belongs, it's such a relief. It's so freeing.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has a lot of positive benefits for all parts of your life, but, you know, also the benefit of helping you get ready mm-hmm. for the relationship that you want.
Yeah. And so what's also key is is that you have the skills to really be able to create a happy, healthy relationship. And those skills, they're not infinite. You know, there's a very concrete set of them. And they're not that hard to learn, but they include being aware of your own of your emotions, what's happening to you when you're feeling emotions, being aware of how you speak, being able to speak without things like criticism or blame, how you listen. Oftentimes we listen with filters. We listen maybe when we grew up, we got a lot of criticism, and so we hear criticism when there's not criticism. We often have those kinds of filters. So learning about that, and also learning how to build intimacy. How do you go about building intimacy on a day-to-day basis with somebody else? And also, again, how you work with your triggers and what comes up. How do you deal with that? And also how you navigate the differences between you. Two people are two universes unto themselves. I mean, you may have a lot of similarities. You may have similar senses of humor. You may have similar backgrounds. Or you may have very different backgrounds. There are always going to be differences between two people. How do you navigate those differences? Do you have the skills to navigate them?
Yeah, and so, again, that's a big part of what we teach, so that you can navigate the differences with compassion and curiosity and affection and respect, so that they don't have to create rifts between you. They don't have to create, you know, chasms and then leave scar tissue and then create minefields where you're just, you know, tiptoeing around to try to avoid explosions, you know, which... all of which are things probably that, you know, we've been in relationships like that, or we've certainly seen them. I know I used to kind of have a fear of getting together with somebody that was too different from me because I didn't know how to navigate those differences skillfully. Mm-hmm. And yet, of course, I was always attracted to people that were different from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would end up getting right. together with mm-hmm. them. But there were just some essential missing pieces
mm-hmm.
there
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about fear, I think that fear is something that is present in a lot of this process, fears that have to do with dating and relationships. There's, you know, the fear of getting rejected or hurt, fear of hurting other people. We hear that a lot. A lot of women we talk to are really afraid of hurting other women's feelings.
Sometimes to the point where they'll get in a relationship they don't want to be in,
right?
Because they're so scared of hurting the other person's feelings.
Right. Yes. Fear of feeling embarrassed or foolish or vulnerable, fear of being unlovable. I mean, I really had that one for sure. Feeling of being engulfed, of having to give ourselves up, or fear of being abandoned. Fear that we won't get what we need or what we want. You know, there's during the dating process, there's fear about what to say and when to say it and how to say it and how to, you know, approach people or how to ask people for a date and how to get what you want if you ask for it. And also fear of other people wanting something that you can't give. So this is all normal, natural. It's universal. And fears are things to be befriended. I think fear is a feeling that we often want to get rid of. We want to suppress it. We want to throw it away. We want to ignore it. We want to rationalize it away. But, in fact, fear can really be our friend. And there are some great somatic tools that we teach that can help us shift the fear and befriend the fear.
And part of why fear can be our friend is because sometimes it contains really important information.
Yes.
You know, if you're dating somebody and fear comes up, it might be because you're actually seeing something in her that is a red flag or is a sign of an incompatibility.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes fear gives us information we need to pay attention to, and we ignore it at our peril.
Okay.
But I think we all also know the place where fear stops us from doing things we really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, if you want to have a big life or a deep life or a richly satisfying life, whatever that looks like for you, it is really important not to have your fear control you, not to have your fear call the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Michelle talks about befriending fear, part of the process that we teach is actually calming the fear, you know, looking into it to see, okay, is this a fear that is telling me something I need to pay attention to? Or is this just a fear that is coming up basically related to a trigger, you know, that I don't want to let stop me? And if that's the case, then using some of the somatic body-based tools that we teach to melt the fear, you know, to let yourself get bigger than the fear rather than having the fear be bigger than you,
right,
is
really powerful and important part of the conscious dating and conscious relationship dance.
Yeah. And so the other part of conscious, the conscious approach to dating and love is actually the process of dating. What do you do? You know, how do you meet women? How do you actually ask them out? You know, how to notice what went at the first date or the second date. You know, how she responds to what you say, and what does she say, and how does she say it, and just noticing those red flags that might be waving in your face, and noticing if you try to ignore them. You know, just really being aware of what's going on. And it's not really about rules. You know, on the first date you should do this, and on the second date you should do that. It's really about bringing awareness and consciousness to the entire process, so that you really can have this end up moving in the direction of what you really want.
And we use that phrase red flags a lot. And basically a red flag is anything that is a potential warning sign about the other person. And in the 12-week class, we have a long, long list of potential red flags. And then we also suggest that people inquire when they're dating somebody who, you know, has one of these flags, find out more about it. Ask her some questions about it. Observe her behavior in relation to it. Because some of the red flags actually might end up turning yellow or even green, and some of them get even redder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was going to talk about a red flag that I used to ignore, but maybe you have one of those as well. No,
go ahead.
So I know for me, often, you know, when I was first getting together with somebody, you know, we would have that conversation about, well, what were your past relationships like? What were my past relationships like? And often I would hear these horror stories from women about how terrible their past relationships were and how badly they had been mistreated or how unfair their partners had been. And now I recognize, hey, this is a big red flag. But at the time, it just brought out the sort of healer, caregiver part of me. You know, this was before my conscious girlfriend skills. Mm. So I'd be like, oh, my God, you had that terrible experience. I would never do that to you. And, you know, unfortunately, in some cases, those ended up being women who behaved in certain ways. You know, she and I would get locked in certain patterns where I would end up basically replicating her story. Because when we're not aware of our story, we often will replicate it over and over and over. So somebody having had difficult relationships in the past is not necessarily a red flag. The key that we would suggest that you look for is, how does she talk about her relationships? How does she hold it? How aware is she of the part she played in creating those difficult relationships? How much has she taken skills to change her behavior or her way of relating to her feelings so that she could show up differently? You know, if somebody is blaming everybody else in the past, that's a bad sign. But if somebody is honest and forthright and says, hey, these are some of the problems I ran into in the past, I've done a lot of thinking about them, I've done a lot of healing, that's actually a case where it would turn into a green flag.
Exactly, yeah. And another example I was going to give about red flags that can be different is, there's often people think about, well, if somebody lives with their ex, that's a real red flag. And it can be, although we have a great example of somebody who does live with their ex, but it's really family. They've created a very healthy, wonderful connection. They're really, everything is totally clear. There's no leftover stuff. They're all just really greatly connected. And actually, one of them now has their new girlfriend who's moved in with them, and they're all this sort of nice, happy little family. So it can be a red flag, but it also can be a totally green flag.
And so, again, I think that's the essence of the conscious process that we teach. Is it's not about having, you know, strict guidelines where it's like, avoid this, look for this. It's much more about diving underneath the surface, knowing more about who you are, what matters to you, what's important to you, gaining the additional skills you need and being really mindful about who the other person is as well. So there's one more thing that we want to talk about before we open it up for questions,
right.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's this massive issue. We could
right.
spend an hour just on this, but
yeah.
we won't tonight.
Right.
Of chemistry and attraction and compatibility and this other thing, which some of you may have heard of, some of you may not have, called limerence.
Yeah. And limerence is a brain state that comes on when two people are mutually attracted to each other, to women, or to two people, actually. It's
gender
neutral.
Of any gender,
yeah,
right.
Gender neutral. It tends to be super fired on when people have sex, although it can happen without, in absence of sex. It also can, one person can be in limerence, the other person cannot be, but it is a brain state. The brain, it's evolved from a place of, you know, having to assure that two people can mate and take care of an offspring. So that's the evolutionary origin of it. Your brain is pumping out oxytocin and endogenous opiates. That's sort of your internal heroine. And so you are literally high. And that's that falling in love, which is really falling in lust.
Or falling in limerence,
right.
Yeah.
And it's time limited. It generally lasts from 3 to 6 months at the outside a year. And so it does end. And oftentimes what happens with lesbians is, you know, as Ruth was saying, how she got into relationships, you know, you have a date or two. If there's chemistry, you go to bed, and then you're in a relationship. And then limerence kicks in, and you're actually, like, happily high on this lust.
And limerence really can start even if you don't have sex right away as well. I mean, limerence is really produced just by the sexual energy, the flirtation, the chemistry, the crushed out phase, all of that can lead you into limerence. So, we talk to some women that don't have the pattern of going to bed right away, and, you know, they do date for several months or more before they become sexual. But even so, they can still start being guided, feeling their decisions guided by limerence. And what we have seen is that two women together seem to be more subject to limerence and more intense limerence than couples of other genders. Because it seems like, you know, as a general rule, and of course there are many individual exceptions, but as a general rule, men tend to have a little bit more resistance to limerence. And that's why in the straight world, you often hear, you know, the woman wanting commitment and the guy sort of backing away. But what often happens between two women is that both women fall head over heels in limerence. And when you're in limerence, as Michelle said, you're stoned, and it feels like love. So, you know, you look at the other person, and she just looks so perfect. She just looks like everything you've ever wanted, and you can't imagine that you're ever going to have a conflict with her because she's so perfect. And, you know, this is the phenomenon that leads to, the famous joke about what does a lesbian bring on the second date?
Right. Yeah.
The U-Haul.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you don't hear what a gay man bring on the second date, what a straight couple bring on the second date,
right.
You know? This tends to be more of a woman-with-woman phenomenon.
Yeah.
And we've talked to couples that have actually met, moved in together, and gotten engaged within 3 weeks. We've talked to couples that have met online and moved across the country to be together when they barely knew each other. And every once in a while, those kinds of impulse moves can work out if you get really lucky. But the problem is that when you're making big decisions based on limerence, you're not in your right mind. You're not able to consciously, mindfully assess who's the other person. Does she really line up with who I am and what I want? And so that's where we see these really painful, confusing breakups, sometimes happening just a few months down the line, sometimes happening a few years down the line, because what really drew the two women together was limerence, and they didn't know it was limerence. They thought it was love.
Yeah.
And so they didn't limerence doesn't mean you can't get to love. Limerence can be a beautiful gateway into building real intimacy and love, but it isn't love by itself.
Right. Yeah.
And so if you confuse it for love and then you don't do what's needed to build the real foundation for a healthy relationship, or the limerence hooks you up with somebody mm-hmm. with whom you can't actually even do that building of a healthy relationship, that's where
right.
you really get into trouble.
Yeah. And so one of the things we talk a lot about is compatibility, because knowing whether or not you're compatible with somebody before you get into limerence is pretty important, because once you're in limerence, you can't make that decision with your right mind. And so we talk about three levels of compatibility, and oftentimes I think compatibility, sort of in general, people think about, they think of the first level, which is things, activities or interests or
having things in
having things in common, you know, whether it be background or interests or hobbies or that kind of thing. And the second level of compatibility, which people talk about, is the chemistry, that connection, that rapport. You like to, you know, you enjoy each other's company. It's hard to define what that is exactly, but it's that level of chemistry. But there's a third level that we talk about, which is really important, which most people miss. And that's having a shared relationship vision or a close enough relationship vision and the skills to carry out that relationship vision, the skills to manifest it. And that's a level of compatibility that is actually the one that will make the most difference.
Right. It's not that the other two aren't important,
right.
but you can have all kinds of great things in common. You can have tons of great chemistry. And if you don't also both have a similar vision and the skills to carry out that vision, your relationship can become a nightmare. You know, because
exactly.
unfortunately, just having the stuff in common and the chemistry, the rapport, you know, loving looking into each other's eyes, isn't going to be enough over the long haul.
Right.
And I suspect probably everybody on this call tonight already knows that.
Yeah.
you've probably run into that.
Yeah.
So again, these are things that we cover in much more detail in the 12-week roadmap class. And so one of the invitations we'd like to extend to you, if this call has been helpful to you tonight and you would like to go deeper, is that we have a new 12-week roadmap to Conscious Lesbian Dating and Lasting Love class starting on September 22nd. And it's already about half full.
It is already about half full. Yeah.
We limit them to 25 women. And this past time, the past roadmap class, we had women from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think this time we may have some international participants as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, really cool community. You can participate from anywhere because much of the class is online and, well, all of it is either online or by phone. So the way the class works is that each week we make that week's materials available to you. There's usually several audio lessons and several written worksheets that will walk you through the process of gaining and practicing these skills. All the skills that we've talked about tonight, plus a bunch more. Yeah. And then every 2 weeks, there's a two-hour group coaching call, which we do live. So you get to call in, hear all of the other women in the class, hear their check-ins, how they're doing with the material, share your check-in, ask your questions, hear their questions, and you get to hear our answers live. And if the calls are scheduled at a time when you can't make it, you can email us questions ahead of time, and then we will answer them in the call, and you'll get the recording. And we also have a private Facebook group for our clients and students, which was really, really active,
Yeah.
In fact, it still is really active.
Yeah, people asking questions of each other and giving feedback to each other, giving support to each other about things that are going on. It's really been fun to watch it.
Yeah, so it's really a container for, I think, what I wish I had gotten when I was much younger. We actually have a participant in the group who's 79, and she keeps saying, God, I wish I had learned this earlier. God, I wish I had learned this earlier. But then she says, I'm glad I'm learning it now. I'm so glad I'm learning it now, you know. And a lot of the people in the class have been reporting that they're, many of them are not dating now. They're single and they haven't started dating yet, but that their other relationships are changing, you know, whether it's relationships with adult children or coworkers or neighbors or friends. Because of these new skills that they're bringing, they're really feeling the difference.
Yeah.
And so that's a cool thing that we love to facilitate. So if you're hearing this and you know that the class is speaking to you, you can go and sign up even while we're still on the line or later on tonight. The website to go to is consciousgirlfriend.com, and then it's a slash, and then roadmap. So that will take you to the page where you can sign up. And if you're not ready to sign up tonight, I'm sure that we will, you know, likely still have spaces open over the next few days. So, you know, you can certainly get in touch with us and ask us questions and that kind of thing. But don't wait too long because, you know, the spaces are limited in the class. We also have just a couple other things that we'll mention very briefly. We do offer coaching. So if you're somebody who feels like you're not so drawn to the group experience and you really want the one-on-one support, Michelle does walk women through the whole 12-week program one-on-one as well. And if you don't need the whole program, you want to do shorter period of coaching, we do that.
And it's really focused and tailored for what's up for you, what's important for you, what your priorities are, what you need.
Right. So like some women realize, okay, I really need to work on communication because I have a habit of being really critical and it has messed up my past relationships and I don't want to do that again. And so that would be a great focus to bring into coaching. Some women say, you know, I really need to work on the self-love piece because I know that I keep giving myself away and compromising in ways that I shouldn't. And, you know, it's not even the other person's fault. It's just that I don't know how to show up and hold my own because I don't value myself enough. You know, and so, again, that's something that Michelle works with really, really expertly.
And it's special to me, I think, because it's a journey that I went through, and I really love working with women on that particular topic because it's close to my heart.
There's a particular practice that Michelle teaches that was really transformational for her. Maybe you could say something about that for a minute.
Yeah, it's a one of the things that's important in the process of coming to this place where you can really fully and completely love yourself is having compassion for yourself. And there's a practice which is called metta, which some of you may be familiar with from a Buddhist perspective, but which really helps you cultivate self-compassion.
And we've created our own version of it.
And we teach it very often.
And part of how it works, and actually part of how all of this stuff that we're talking about works, is through the wonder of what's called neuroplasticity in our brains. It's such a cool thing because this has just been really discovered and proven over the last decade or two. And so you may have heard the term neuroplasticity or you may not have. But basically what brain scientists have found is that unlike what they used to think, you know, they used to think that our brains basically got formed and then, you know, they were sort of solid after age five or something. What they find is that our brains are more like plastic than they are like stone. So we can actually groove new neural pathways. We literally, physiologically change our brains when we learn new skills and practice them you know, concertedly over a period of time.
Yep.
So whether that's the skill of self-love and compassion or the skill of, you know, not letting your triggers overrun you in relationships,
or
whatever.
The skill of speaking specific certain ways, speaking cleanly without criticism.
Right,
yep.
Right. Yeah, every one of these things is completely learnable, and you will change your brain in the process. So over time, it will get much easier.
In fact, it will become automatic.
Yeah. So, and we have one more program that we are about to start. We don't even have it up on our website yet because it's so new, We haven't formally announced it yet, but I thought I would just put the bug in your ear, which is matchmaking. And we were reluctant to do this for a long time, basically because we just wanted to help women have the kind of happy relationships that they wanted. And we thought, well, you know, once we get you ready, you can go find each other. But we've gotten so much feedback from women that they want help with that piece. And we work with so many amazing women who, you know, we know would be really happy with each other because they all have the same commitments. They've all been learning these skills. So we finally decided, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to create a vehicle where we can introduce you to one another in very specific ways based on what you tell us your top priorities are. So if that interests you, definitely stay tuned for that. We'll be announcing that more soon. But meanwhile, whether you're interested in our matchmaking services or interested in finding women to date in other ways, either way, the 12-week roadmap is a great preparation because it'll really give you the skills that you need. So with that said, let's open it up.
And so if you are all muted, so do ** to unmute yourself and ask a question.
And we welcome your questions about any of the programs we offer or just anything that's going on in your dating or relationship life. So whoever wants to ask. Oh, hello.
This is Monica, and definitely I want to sign up for the 12-week class, and I'm going to send you an email.
Okay, wonderful.
And I'm very grateful. You guys resonate very strongly with me. Three quick questions. I'm going to tell you about long living apart together concept.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking to live with the lady, but hopefully that she and I would live like near each other, like
mm-hmm.
in the same town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to send you some of the websites that inform people about it. Started in Europe, and now it's come over to the United States. It's called LAT, Living Apart Together, for those that want to Google it.
Uh-huh, great.
And there's also my second question is it better for me to seek her place or to seek her first or the place to live? To relocate before start looking for her or to look for her first?
That's a great question. And having talked to you a little bit before, I know that you're really not happy in the place you're living.
Correct.
You know, so I think it's great to get yourself into a situation where you are happy where you are. In general, that would be my first recommendation. You know, that said, if you happen to meet somebody while you're still flexible, and if she lives in a place where you think you'd be happy living, you know, that's another piece, because I know you live in a small place where there's not much community and you're hoping to change that.
Correct.
You know, so I'd hate to see you find a wonderful woman that lived in a similar place. Unless then you both wanted to move together.
And my last question is, on eHarmony, they have internet dating called Compatible Partners, where they ask you 1,000 questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Just like eHarmony for straight people.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that is better than a lot of the other lesbian dating websites, because they make a great effort to get to know you better.
Well, take those questions, and I actually am not super impressed by them in terms of the conscious approach. I'm not super impressed that they're actually getting at the right things. That said, I think each of the different, you know, there's OkCupid, there's Match.com, there's this one, there's the lesbian, there's a lot of lesbian-focused ones. There's a lot of different ones, and I think that it's, you know, some people might like, some of it's geographic, like there's a ton of people on OkCupid in the Bay Area, but not other places. So I think just try different ones and see what works. I don't know that I would say that one is any better than any of the others.
I let the other ladies speak, but I have tried many of them, and I'm very disappointed. A lot of my the things I have to bring to a relationship is like my personality, and that doesn't show up very well on the internet. I'm not very well good looking, and I'm not like very well off. I'm on disability, so it's like I'm hoping that I can join gatherings of women where we get to know one another in a non-pressured way.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, as for the cruise, Olivia Cruises, I think they're very good, but they're way too expensive. There's a lot of hidden charges, just to warn you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can afford it, it's a great thing to do. But I had come to the conclusion I cannot afford it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Thank you so much, but count me in.
Wonderful, okay. Monica. And one of the things that we do in the 12-week program also is help women figure out how to write an online profile that really does reflect who you are and will actually even give you feedback on your profile if you send it to us. Because I think there are ways, you know, there are pros and cons of online dating. But Michelle and I met through online dating in actually a, you know, horrible site that in general, you know, is not going to work well for most people at all. But I think it's just proof that the, you know, the internet gods have a great sense of humor.
Yes.
'Cause we met through a Craigslist ad, you know, so it's definitely doable. But Michelle's ad, which actually is contained in its entirety in our book, Finding Her, The Single Lesbian's Guide to Lasting Love, it was a very long ad that told me so much about who she is that just from reading the ad, I knew that she was going to be my next partner. So that's what I would want to see for you, Monica, and for everybody else who wants to do online dating.
You are the second couple, though, I have learned that have met through Craigslist, by the way.
Uh-huh, yeah. So
you're not the first.
So miracles do happen. So thank you, and let's see if other people have questions.
Thank you.
Anybody else with a question, just hit ** to unmute yourself. Or a comment.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Is that me?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, hi. I wanted to ask if you could tell us a little bit more about your matchmaking service.
Yes, we are still in the process of completely refining it. But what I would suggest actually is just send us an email, or actually Michelle recognizes who you are from your phone number, so we can send you more information about it as we develop it. As soon as we kind of are ready to launch it, which should be within the next few weeks, we will have it on our website, and we will send out an email to everybody on the list. But basically what we're thinking about is, you know, a way to where we would interview you, find out a lot about what you're looking for, and then we would tape a video interview with you, and then, you know, when we find matches, we would let you see video interviews with one another before you know who each other is. And then we would kind of gently facilitate the process of putting you in contact. So our aim would be to really, you know, make the match in many ways, you know, based on our knowledge and understanding of who you are, and try to take a lot of the awkwardness that seems to create barriers between people away.
Wonderful. That sounds great.
Great.
I'm in.
Well, definitely stay tuned.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So how do I mute myself now?
Oh, it's okay. I can mute you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Who else has a question? Just hit ** or a comment or something you'd like to share.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I talked to you at Mitch.
Oh, okay, great. What's your name?
This is Bianca. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Good to hear from you, Bianca.
Yeah, I didn't get to.
She'll be seeing you soon at the BLU.
That's right. Who's going to? Oh, Michelle's going to be there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. I'll look for you then. So I was listening to what you were saying about, I think, red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And how some of them, I guess, I was getting that correctly, can turn into yellow or green flags or what have you. What can you say more about that? Are these things that, because I thought about, you know, past relationships and how I consider myself today, yeah, I knew way in the beginning that this wasn't going to work, but yet I don't regret having had those relationships because I had some you know, experiences that I value, and things happen in those situations that you know, either I learned from, or I'm just glad I had those experiences. They you know, they kind of what's the word? You know, fleshed out my life more. That's not the term I wanted, but I think you know what I mean. Made it more interesting. Mm-hmm. And if I said early on, well, I can tell so-and-so doesn't communicate very much, and that is absolutely critical to me, and so we probably shouldn't have this relationship. Had I done that, you know, we wouldn't have had the experience at all. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I think, I don't know if, you know, waiting for, like, the perfect, and I know that's not, I imagine that's not what you're suggesting, but I think people that, maybe folks that have a lot of good things, like, you know, they seem to be very faithful or very kind, and yet, as I said, not very communicative, for example, I still think that it could be a worthwhile experience, even though I kind of, you know, I kind of know early on that it may not last because there's something, there's a red flag that's telling me this is important to me and it's not here. I don't know if you want to talk more about that.
I think it totally depends on what you really want. I mean, if it's okay with you to spend, you know, a year or some amount of time with somebody to learn stuff and to get to know them and to experience something with the idea that it might not be lasting, and that's okay with you, then that's fine. I think it's so many women that we talk to are looking for the one relationship that will last them for their life. And so if you're looking for that, then it's really important to be assessing, so for example, not being able to communicate well is something that will get in the way of building intimacy. It will get in the way of healing conflict. And it can be, make the relationship, it won't last. But if you're looking for relationships that will last, then paying attention to those red flags is important. And the things, there's some red flags that are really red, you know, that go in other directions. Heavy alcohol and drug use is one of them, is one red flag. Being extremely critical and blaming is another big red flag, that there isn't really much space for that one to go in a different direction. But anyway, it really depends on what it is you want. I mean, you know. Yeah.
And part of what we say also is that it depends on who the other person is and what her commitments are. Because right. If you get together with somebody who doesn't have great communication skills, but she knows it and she wants to change that, absolutely it's something that
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Michelle herself used to be in that category,
yeah,
right?
I did used to be in that category, totally.
You know, we talk to some women now. Sometimes we talk to them, sometimes we talk to their girlfriends, who they just don't know what they feel when they're feeling it. It's not even that they're not willing to communicate. They don't know what the feeling is. And so sometimes it creates this dynamic where one woman is saying, just tell me what you feel, you know, just tell me. And the other woman just retreats further and further because she doesn't know how. And, you know, Michelle always says, that used to be me.
That was me.
So definitely these things can change where there is a willingness and a commitment to changing them. But, yeah, I mean, when you're at a point in your life where you're just open to whatever happens and open to whatever learning comes down the pike, that can be great. But if at a certain point you're saying to yourself, I don't want to do that again because breakups are just too traumatic, you know, or, you know, I'm tired of having these huge shifts in my life. I really want to find somebody and go deeper over a period of years and have it be really fulfilling. That's when I think these tools are really key.
Oh, so are you sort of saying that, you know, at some point, you know, we might say, well, the 3 years I spent in that relationship was sort of time wasted if we didn't wind up staying together, you know.
No. And that's actually why I don't like the term failed relationship, you know. It's all a question of how you hold it, right? But I don't regret any of the relationships that I had. They all were great sources of learning. That is true. Wanted to learn in a different way. I didn't want to learn through that frustration and that pain and that not being able to match up. You know, I was ready because there's great learning in this relationship too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though we both communicate well and we still get to learn.
I just think on, for example, the folks that come to mind now, they're like people that, you know, I had, you know, relatively long-term relationships with, like, years. We're not together anymore, but we're still sort of, you know, we're on good terms, we're on friendly terms, you know, if I reach out or they reach out, you know, we're certainly civil and friendly to one another, and those are, that's valuable to me. I wonder if it's realistic to sort of hold out and keep kind of shuffling or what the deck, so to speak, or whatever, for the person. Is it realistic to wait on the one person? Is that realistic?
Well,
is that what you're suggesting?
It's not the one person like in Hollywood. Like, it's not like she finally rides up on the white horse and your eyes meet and you know she's the one and you live happily ever after. But it's all about what you want. If at some point you say to yourself, I really want to build a relationship that lasts over many years or decades or potentially the rest of your life, you know, whatever your goal is, and I want it to be a relationship which is alive and sparkling and passionate and connected, you know, then if that's a goal, just like any other goal that you might have in your life, then we say it's achievable when you take the right steps.
But that might not be your goal.
Right.
I mean,
we're not saying what your goal should
be.
Yeah. We're just saying that if it is your goal, then absolutely it is achievable. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is how important is you know, physical appeal? Because I think there have been, you know, people that you know, with whom the relationship didn't work ultimately, and part of it was, you know, I'm not that attracted to this person, and she's very sweet, she's friendly or what have you, but I'm just not ultra attracted, you know, and I think it kind of fell apart there, you know, and let there be anything else, like, I don't know,
it's got
maybe
to be
not. What's that?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say? What did you say?
Oh, we didn't,
say anything
yet.
Somebody else did. But I guess there are a couple things to say to that. I mean, number one, it's what actually has been, it's interesting because the research actually shows that the longer that you know someone, that attraction can shift in the positive direction, right? So you can go from being not so super attracted to somebody to being way attracted to them as you get to know them. But also sometimes that change in attraction is actually masking something deeper, something that's not quite satisfying in a way to you, or not quite right. There's maybe a conflict or a tension. Sometimes that's a mask. So that's when you look at.
And
meaning there's something else. There's something other than the not so great physical attraction that I don't appreciate.
Well, there are so many different aspects of attraction and chemistry and sexual compatibility. You know, I think this is really a longer conversation than we have time to really give it justice for right now. Because there's, you know, how much your head swivels when you just see her cross the room, but then there's, you know, the actual degree of sexual energy, and then there's actually, do you like the same thing sexually, you know, and then there's also, how strong is the emotional connection? Because I think that's what Michelle was talking about when when the attraction changes and it's like, oh, well, it was there, but now it's not. Sometimes it's because there's some scar tissue that has built up between you because of communications that you didn't have or, you know, ways that you were kind of amputating parts of yourself to fit in the relationship. You know, so there can be all kinds of other phenomena that then show up in the sexual component, and we don't always know that it's actually coming from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great question, and we go into all of this, of course, at much greater length in the 12-week class because it's a huge topic. Because we, you know, most of us really want a strong sexual connection, and we want a lot of other things too. So it's, you know, how do we have enough of everything that we want in a lasting way, if we want something lasting?
Yep. Right. I guess, well, I'm going to let you get on to someone else, but I guess I asked that thinking on, you know, the old, it's sort of shallow to just be, the notion that it's shallow to, you know, to look for, you know, someone who looks a certain way, you know, and then sort of.
We don't make any judgments about that. I mean, I think it's a matter of what your priority is. And if that's your priority, that's fine. That's your, you know, I mean, it's really a matter of what you want.
And I think that attraction is not always tied to how someone looks. You know, that's the point about the study showing attraction can grow over time. I know that, you know, I had an amazing sexual connection with a woman for many years who, you know, when I first saw her, she did not fit my visual image at all. But we had amazing, you know, amazing sexual energy between us and a very deep bond of another kind that developed. So, but it's ultimately about what you want, putting the pieces together, knowing what you want, and then putting the pieces together so that you get to have as much of what you want as this life allows. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that interferes with what I want. You know, the clash between what a person may look like and say what kind of person they are, maybe.
So then that sounds like an interesting issue, you know, if we had more time that I would dive into, because it sounds like different parts of you want different things. That maybe part of you is really attached to having a woman who looks a certain way, and another part of you is wanting something deeper.
Right, most definitely.
And you've got a little bit of that foot on the gas, foot on the brake thing that Michelle was talking about. And so clearing up those areas within oneself make it a whole lot easier to navigate.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, though. Thanks. Let's take another question or two. Thank you, Bianca, for sharing all of that.
Sure. I'll see you next week.
Yep. Indeed you will. So if you'd like to ask a question, push ** and to unmute yourself.
Ladies, really quick question. How do I put my hand down?
Oh, it's okay. I'll mute you. That's fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else out there with a question or a comment, something you'd like to share? Just hit ** if you would like to talk. And if some of you are shy, but you want to give us feedback afterward or ask us a question afterward, you can also email us. You can email Ruth@consciousgirlfriend.com or Michelle@consciousgirlfriend.com mm-hmm. with two L's.
And we will be sending out the link recording, the link to the risk recording as well as the things we talked about by email later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, any last questions or comments that anyone has?
I have a question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Earlier when you were talking about the red flags, mm-hmm. you mentioned about identifying that, you know, somebody that you're looking at might have a way of speaking critically. Mm-hmm. And then in another section you mentioned something about a listening filter, where it seemed to me like you were saying sometimes you might hear things in that felt critical, but maybe they weren't. The person wasn't actually trying to criticize you. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about, you know, bridging that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are things that we love to talk about. In fact, we have a whole class which is for sale on the website, which is called Communicate and Be Heard, that goes into this topic in a lot of detail. But basically, we talk about speaking cleanly, which means, you and hopefully whoever you're in a connection with, if she's on the same bandwagon of wanting to do this consciously, learning how to speak, how to say whatever you need to say without criticizing or blaming or attacking. And also how to hear what the other person says without hearing that, ideally, because there's a story that I like to tell about a time when I was driving to meet Michelle somewhere. We had agreed to meet at 3, and she called me at 2:40, and she was at the place where we were meeting already, and she said, "Where are you?" And it was a very interesting moment for me because I noticed part of myself immediately going into defensiveness. Because I was actually stuck in traffic, but I was pretty sure that I would be where I was supposed to be by 3. And so part of me was like, wait a minute, it's only 2:40. What do you care where I am? You know? But then another part of me knows Michelle, and I knew that she actually wasn't asking it in a critical way.
I was just curious because I was sitting there, and we both had driven a long way, so it wasn't like it was we both had driven a fair amount of time, and I was just curious, like, oh, I wonder how far she's gotten.
So, I love noticing those moments because now I just noticed them and I didn't react from that place. At an earlier point in my life, and I think, many of us might hear that innocent question, "Where are you?" and respond with, "Well, I'm caught up in traffic and I'm why are you attacking me?" We work with a lot of couples actually that would hear that as an attack. Right?
Yes.
That question.
Yes.
And then respond as if it was an attack, and then there'd be a huge fight where it actually just started with an innocent question. Now, on the other hand, somebody might say, "Where are you?" and have it not be an innocent question.
This is true.
There might be the implication of, "Where the hell are you? You're always late, and I think you're going to be late again. I don't trust you to be on time," So that's why it's really in both directions, learning to clean up our speech and learning to clean up our listening. And then there's a whole bunch of other things that we teach, too, about how to make requests when there's something that you do want somebody to do differently, how to make a request in a clean way, how to say what's going on for you in a clean, body-based way that is less likely to trigger defensiveness. These kinds of skills are so key, even just in dating, and certainly in relationships. So is this getting at your question at all?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we love talking about this stuff.
Hmm.
So thank you for asking. Well, it's 7:33 our time. I guess it's later for those of you in other time zones. Does anybody have one last question or comment? We'll give you a minute or so to hit **. And otherwise, we will soon call it a night. Hello.
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 Hi. You probably can't answer this in a minute, but I everything you're saying about being in relationships resonates, et cetera, and I'm going to try and take this 12-week course. But, it's really hard to meet people. I broke up a 20-year relationship 2 years ago, and, I live in New York. There should be plenty of people around. And yet, I'm even finding people to date seems just so hard at my age. I'm 57. So it's very frustrating to not even really feel like I can take all of your these things that you're talking about and put them into action, because it seems I don't know what I'm doing wrong, or, you know. So are there obvious things that a person should be thinking about if they're trying to date and just being not very successful?
And when you say not successful, or it's hard to find people to date, and obviously, like you said, you're in an area where there are lots of lesbians, what is it that you're encountering that makes it feel hard?
Messaging people on OkCupid and not getting responses, or, you know, having friends look at my profile and think, you know, what's the matter with my profile, or, you know, what am I putting out there, you know, and just kind of feeling like, I feel like I'm putting myself out there, and I don't feel like I'm getting much response.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume I'm doing something wrong, actually. I don't assume it's the people out there.
Yeah. You know, it's a great question, and it's a question we get extremely commonly. And in fact, that hearing your question over and over and over again, you know, at first a lot of women would say there's no one out there, and we would say we know there are women out there because we talk to them every day. And
right.
Then at a certain point, we just decided to start the matchmaking service so that we could help women find one another, as we mentioned earlier. I don't know all the reasons why it seems to be so hard for women to find one another. I do know, you know, one thing we talk about a lot with online dating services is that you can't take it personally when you message people and they don't respond, because there's a million different things that can be going on with people that put up online profiles. Sometimes they're, you know, they just put it up in an impulse and they're not really ready, or they get scared, or something else changes in their life. But without seeing your profile and knowing you better, you know, having a longer conversation, obviously we wouldn't be able to say, you know, if you have a particular block, you know, if there is something about how you're responding or how you're presenting yourself that might not be sending the signals you want to send, you know, if there is some place of fear in you, or, you know, something that's not completely ready or clear, you know, I mean, often we're guessing that those are the kinds of things, or we see that those are the kinds of things that often seem to get in the way. But your frustration is such a common one, and it is kind of baffling, because we know there are tons of women out there, specifically in your age group. You know, so many women in their mid-50s to mid-60s that are engaging with our work that are having trouble meeting each other. So, you know, if the 12-week class calls to you, I think you probably get a lot of insight and support from that. You know, we also are doing a retreat, but that's here in California, so that might be
right
to come. And, you know, and we've got the matchmaking service that we'll be launching soon. So, you know, and maybe there are just some little tweaks, like maybe going back to your profile after this call, you'll think, oh, yeah, there are these other ways that I could say more clearly what I'm looking for, you know, and other places in my heart that I could open up a little bit more, that maybe would make the difference. Okay, you know, it's hard to say for sure.
Yeah, I know you can't really answer specifically, but it's interesting that you just say that many women are telling you the same thing. And
I think
it's almost every
woman that we've worked with has said this exact thing. I mean, really, we hear it so much, and so it's so interesting to us that we hear it so much. We hear it from women who are, you know, in the middle of nowhere in Indiana, and women who live in the Bay Area or New York. And so
right.
We know it's not just about actual, you know, sort of actual population.
I think if I had to voice a theory, you know, it might be in part just that we get more risk averse as we get older. You know, you know, the hormones are raging less. We don't have the same things that used to push us past our fear or our cautiousness. You know, so I think literally, you know, over a certain age, I don't know what the magic cutoff is, but, you know, certainly over 50 or 55, we literally, it's not just that we don't want to date in the ways that maybe we did before. We actually can't. You know, it won't happen. And so I think some of it is having to learn a new way. And maybe, you know, if you're in that age group, you're looking to date other women in that age group, you know, they're out there, you're out there, but there's something that's preventing the connection from happening. And that's what we keep trying to get at in all of our work. And, you know, ultimately what we're going to try to get at with the matchmaking service as well, you know, really making it a whole lot easier for people.
It's particularly puzzling because you think, well, you know, I can just go out. It's not such a big risk to go out for coffee with somebody and maybe they'll become my friend, right? Which would also be fine, right? It would be great to have new friends. But so on a certain level, I don't understand the risk issue. But I don't know. I know it's not working for me.
It's funny. We teach live workshops in Oakland. We just did one this past weekend. And one of the exercises that we have people do is go around the room and ask each other out, practice asking each other out fictitiously, you know, just pretend, and also practice saying no. And because, you know, we all need to be able to say no as well as be able to say yes. And it's amazing how much fear it brings up for people. Again, you know, self-inquiry is the only thing that can reveal what might make the stakes feel high for you or what might make it hard for you, you know, because you're right. It's not, you know, rationally you'd say what's the big risk. And, you know, maybe part of it is that if we haven't known, speaking for myself, because I didn't used to know how to get into relationships consciously, if a coffee date led to chemistry and chemistry led to being in bed and being in bed led to an instant relationship, the stakes of a coffee date actually could be pretty high. You know, that might not have been your pattern, but that was certainly part of my pattern. So anyway, I guess what I'd say is, you know, I hope to see you, hear from you again in one of the different venues that we offer. And, you know, meanwhile, I hope you just can keep learning from the different tools that we send out in emails and classes that we offer, because what you're speaking to is just so universal. It seems like it's a hump that a lot of women past a certain age seem to be confronting. And we want to help you, those of you that want to, we want to help you get over that hump.
I think you should start your matchmaking service right away.
Well, we're working to get it. So, you know, like I said, email us if you're interested. We are, when we announce it, we are going to have a, you know, special reduced price for the first 20 women that sign up. So, you know, so that we start to build a pool. So, you know, you can let us know if that's something that appeals to you. So I think we should wrap it up, but thank you so much, all of you, for being here. We can see a lot of you have stayed on the line till the end. We love talking to you and listening to you, and we hope to remain in contact. And if you want to sign up for the roadmap class, again, it's consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap.
Yeah, thanks for showing up, and we're really happy to get to speak with you tonight. And looking forward to seeing you again in another call or another venue or another class or a retreat or something, coaching, whatever.
Right. We're here to try to keep on helping you take charge of your relationship destiny.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Create whatever it is you want to create with that. Okay.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.